Did I say that I made a slave race?
Yeah.
I mean a race
of slaves.
What did you call us?
Wizard.
No.
Wizard.
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 Hello and welcome to the fifth episode of the We Are Not Wizards podcast. I can assure you that we are not wizards. Okay, if you guys need back support, you can just use a pillow.
This is great content, Kevin.
This is great content. My name is Kevin Paps. With me is Lane Davis.
Lane Davis.
And Kyle Prawl.
I don't have a quote.
Kyle Prawl doesn't have a quote. Kyle Prawl of PlayStationUniverse.com.
What's up, guys?
I don't know if we have listeners yet, but I'm sure that you can fish some out of the ether for PlayStation.
Yeah, I can tap all, like, 230 of my Twitter followers and bring them over to this podcast.
Lane, how many tweet shares do you have?
I don't use the tweet shares.
I haven't got nothing. I think I have like 200, so that's like 400. So for all the 400 of you listening, hello and welcome.
Thanks for stopping by.
Now we're going to do our first segment that we always do, what you've been up to, doing, playing, reading, watching, eating even. I know today, Kyle, you and I, we went and got sushi.
Yeah, that's definitely what we've been eating.
Oh God, my God.
It's amazing.
If Kyoto Sushi ever wants to sponsor us, please, please God do. It is so delicious.
I don't know if we have anything to offer them, but yeah, no, yeah. That's so delicious and... oddly perfect for a hot summer day. You know that cold sushi? It's
Yeah, we got the guerrilla marketing for the sushi moguls.
I tell you what, I got home and I just died. I just about like slept for 2 hours. I woke up sweating. It's our first 70 degree day here.
Yeah, 70 degrees means sweat in Minnesota. So for all of our international listeners. So what are you playing?
I've been playing for review for PlayStation Universe, Star Trek, the game. And it's going. I mean, I was kind of a huge fan of the movie reboot, and this one takes place between the two. You know, the upcoming Star Trek Into Darkness.
An interquel movie tie-in?
Yeah, which makes you think, okay, it's an interquel, so it can't be as bad as all the other movie tie-ins. It's actually just as bad, if not worse. It's funny for the first 90. Funny for the first 90 minutes. You know, you get some of the. These really, really twisted phases, right? I was telling Ernest this at sushi. You've got like, you know those internet ads for like the children with the cleft lip, like the fucked up faces. And...
You get really weird internet ads. what kind of search terms is Google looking for?
Man, that's how they've pinned me, huh? They get the cleft lip.
Why is my lip so weird?
No, they try to replicate the faces of like Chekhov and Uhura, and some of them come off all right, like Kurgan Spock are totally fine, but people like Chekhov and whatever character Harold from Harold and Kumar plays, right? I don't know, he's on the bridge, he's with the rest of the crew.
Is he?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen Star Trek.
No, anyway, they're all totally fucked up. Like,
I remember Simon Pegg.
He's probably the worst. He's the guy with the cleft lip. the character models are just atrocious. It's like super, super linear attempt at co-op and the most arbitrary of co-op where your teamwork extends to come over here and mash square so we can pry this door open together, or you need to hold square, hacking this keypad while I run over here and use the path I just opened up. I mean, you're just fighting, like, dinosaurs. Like, the Gorn. The Gorn is your enemy, and they look... Every one of them looks like the lizard from Spider-Man.
Oh, man.
Except for the grunts, who look like velociraptors with plasma rifles.
So, this is like the Turok sequel that nobody wants.
It's strange, yeah. Turok, or, like, it's like the lighthearted comedy attempt at Dino Crisis. But it's just terrible, and yeah, I played it for like 90 minutes, and I think I'm already halfway through it.
Oh my God.
Judging by chapter select, I'm like approaching the halfway point, so yeah, it's rough. That is what I am unfortunately playing, because I just wrapped up like 4 weeks of Bioshock Infinite. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to join you guys for the spoiler cast.
Yeah, that was pretty fun, and it's Emma's been out sick, and she's out busy today writing a 35-page paper screenplay. So if Emma, Emma, if you're listening, our hearts go out to you. I don't know what else to say about that.
Yikes.
Yeah.
I can't imagine writing that much right now. Not when it looks like this outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Bioshock Infinite was obviously fantastic. And, I mean, it's one of those things where the moment I finished, I had to consider where it fell on, like, the best games I've ever played. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm still thinking about that. Yeah, otherwise I did start Ni No Kuni the other day, but I won't really be able to dig into that until like school's out and summer break kicks in. But
maybe in a couple of weeks that's something you and I could gab about, because I recently picked it up too, and it was on sale on Amazon for $40.
Totally. It's a sad ass game. Have you started it?
No, I heard someone say like when the trailer first came out, they're like, oh, this kid dies in the beginning and the whole thing is in his head.
No.
But I don't know if it's quite that horrific.
At least I don't think that's how it goes.
This is from a trailer. I don't think this is an actual spoiler, so don't be looking out.
People. Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. It's, first 10 minutes, his mom dies. Like, that's the catalyst to, what happens forward. So it starts off like this really cheery, like, Studio Ghibli movie, and you're kind of in this bright, colorful town, and then he falls in the river, his mom fishes him out, and she has a heart attack. And it's, like, the saddest thing ever.
This is like God. Death Note spinoff? Everyone dies of heart attacks.
I was in tears. It's like 15 minutes. I'm like, this is not the best way to kickstart your 40-hour game. Like, I'm already a broken person. So
oh my
thanks
God.
For that, level 5.
Wow.
Yeah. No, unfortunately, what's the other game? Yeah. Zombie Tycoon 2 is the other game that I'm reviewing right now. I'm kind of double booked. It's a kind of an RTS, like an indie RTS game on PlayStation Network. And, I don't have a final opinion on that yet, but boy, is that going a lot better than Star Trek.
is that exactly what it sounds like? You're a tycoon for zombies?
Yeah, you're kind of this...
Are you spreading zombies or, like, corralling them?
You're corralling them more so, although you do spawn them. You're kind of this gas mask donning dude who, like, the zombies all listen to. It doesn't do a good job throwing narrative in your face, but basically you're, you broke away from your evil scientist overlord to become even more evil so that you could take him down. So you're just, you're leading a pack of zombies against the free world. And it's really cartoony and colorful and these really exaggerated character models. It's pretty fun so far.
You were talking about it a little bit before we recorded. How does it play on console? Slane, you had some concerns about slow scrolling.
Well, now that I hear more about this, it sounds like you're playing a character in this world alongside your zombies.
In a way, yeah. You're the thing that you are trying to protect is yourself, because you're standing on top of this a mobile spawner. Like this basically this overblown truck with a turret and that you can move to and fro. Like, all your unit movements are mapped to the face buttons, so you have a square squad and a circle squad. And, I mean, directing them is as easy as moving your cursor over a building or over an enemy and just hitting square or hitting circle. Your hero is tied to X, I believe, and then your movement is triangle. So the idea is that you're just constantly, like, moving your cursor, moving units. I mean, you generally want to put your mobile spawner a little back from the action, but close enough so that you're in range of, like, shooting people with your turret.
Okay, this is
happens automatically.
You're really similar. I'm gonna roll the 20-sided dice here. You ever play Shiny's game After Earthworm Jim Sacrifice?
No.
Okay, in 2000 they dropped this first-person RTS game, and it would have been perfect for consoles. It sounds like the controls are exactly the same. They went from Earthworm Jim into this game with gods that are basically like the same sort of character design from that.
Okay.
Another very odd game, but. The point is that's the only other time that there's ever really been a RTS game where you play as a character in the mix, and it worked really well. You didn't have to like pan the screen around to go back to your base and build units, and then come back and then control the units.
Yeah, that's part of what makes Zombie Tycoon easier to play than any RTS I've played on console. Is that the action, the focus of your camera is always on where you're moving and where your next spot is, right? So it's just a matter of like. Checking out a new area, hitting all the face buttons to move your people there, and then deciding, okay, should I leave a squad with the mobile spawner while the other guys capture this, like, upgrade shop, or should I, what role does the certain hero monster that I have on this level matter? I mean, that's all I've done so far is a single-player campaign. There aren't a lot of people playing online pre-release, but, I don't know how much I can say about it, actually, because the review embargo is, like, Tuesday morning, so... I won't speak too much on that, but...
What is it, Saturday? We'll probably publish on Monday, so...
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's okay for me to say, like, keep your eye on it. Don't have any definitive opinions yet, but it's certainly... It's far and away better than Star Trek, which I can speak freely about, so...
You heard it here first. Star Trek, the movie tie-in, the game, doublecough.com.
Yeah, in fact, that's one of the only pros I can leverage at Star Trek, the game right now, is that... By its existence, the movie cannot be any worse.
Wow.
Like the movie has to be better, and that's what strength of heart the game gives me. I know that the movie will be better.
Wow.
So,
yeah. Maybe you're setting a really low bar, and the movie's going to be terrible. Who knows?
God, I hope not. No, I'm really excited.
Cool.
I really like the reboot, so, yeah.
Cool. Lane, what have you been up to?
Man, this has been, compared to Kyle's, rather bland week, and that is emblemized by my diet here, the go-mad lifestyle. I'm sure you guys have heard of it. Don't give me those looks.
You told me
about this. A gallon of milk a day.
Yeah.
Trying to put on some pounds, baby. Been a skinny guy for way too long. And moving in.
I can't empathize with
you
that notion.
You can't empathize?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, as a man who is gross, I cannot empathize with, I don't have enough pounds on me.
Yeah.
I can't.
That doesn't make a lick of sense, yeah.
Yeah. So why are you doing this? You're trying to put on weight?
Yeah. I've been like a hard gainer my whole life. I've never been able to like gain muscle, for example. So like just trying to gain both at the same time right now. I think it'll be cool. And speaking of bland attitudes, I am out of the StarCraft competitive scene. Finide, I got too mad. I was taking it out on everybody, and it's out of my life right now.
So you left because you got pissed.
Yeah,
so
I did.
So the great competitive multiplayer curse finally hit you.
Oh, it did. It did. It hit me hard, because, yeah, it was, I couldn't stop playing until I hit the Masters League, which is the second highest league in that game.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I realized that I am just, I am just, like, completely obsessed with this, and it's totally a sunk cost thing now. Like, I can't stop playing, so I have to get out.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing like 8 hours a day.
I feel that. Man, yeah. That's kind of what brought me to quit Guild Wars 2, actually, early last year. I was like hardcore into that game for only like a month, and
Did you have the urge to be like the best or part of an elite group?
Oh, yeah, that was part of the MMO urge. Like, I usually, like, I love my solo content for like the first 30, 40, 50 hours, and then I start to see all the people who are better than me and who, like, know the ins and outs of the games, and you start to get embroiled in that culture, and then just, like, you know,
and the people who don't have jobs and they're way better than you. I hate that.
Yeah, or even like StarCraft, you can know the pro players where it is their job to play all day.
Yeah, so
that is what you're up against, and that is indomitable.
Yeah, where do you fall on that spectrum? I mean, you can't compete on that level.
Yeah, I mean, the best you can do is be a student. Like, isn't your roommate Tom? He's really good, isn't he?
Oh, he's just genetically good. Like, any game he plays, top 2%, easily within a month.
Was it him or his brother that won some tournament?
Oh, well, his brother is better at StarCraft than he is.
Okay.
But, I mean, their whole family's great at everything.
That's their holidays?
A bunch of Wunderkind over there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I've gone over to their house to play Bridge a couple of times. They're all geniuses.
You walked out with a noose.
Yes.
Is that Kaiser?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
I didn't know he was a Wunderkind when it comes to video games.
Yeah. So you're off the StarCraft wagon.
Oh, onto this and that, playing more D&D than ever, and some Monaco. Game just released a couple days ago, I should say. It's a top-down heist game. Most unusual co-op experience I've ever had, because unlike other co-op experiences, you don't just kind of shoot at the same monster. You aren't all doing the same thing. Each person takes on a very different role, and you have to do things so that each other can advance.
Okay. Is it better than Payday?
No. It's a completely alternate experience than that. They're utterly uncomparable.
But except for the heist idea, right? I mean,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 Like, Payday is a first-person game.
Right? It's probably better than Payday, though. I mean, objectively, it's probably a better game than Payday.
Is it better than Kane and Lynch? That came out of heist mode. No one remembers Kane and Lynch.
It's less unusual than Kane and Lynch. You don't have mysterious alternate objectives that involve screwing people over.
Oh.
It's like Portal. You help each other out unless you feel like dicking each other over for fun.
That sounds kind of fun.
You know what I want to break off of that, though? Because Monaco's kind of like a sort of an indie-ish title,
absolutely,
right? Okay, it's definitely an indie title. Yeah, I was playing Antichamber the other day.
Really?
Like, I managed to reach an hour of game time, an hour of just solid game time before I had to stop because my head was swimming.
Bravo, yeah.
Like, wow. I was like, I mean, maybe it was that, like, the LED TV I was playing off of, but, like, the interplay of colors or the absence of colors, you know, the low-res edges and stuff, like, my head was swimming from all that game's illusions and stuff. I couldn't play for more than an hour. I was doing it at a friend's house, so, I mean, I can't play it on my own, but, boy, that was interesting. Yeah, I didn't really get the, It's gimmick, right? Because, I mean, it's a first-person puzzle game in the vein of Portal, but it's like, everything you encounter is not as it seems. Like, well, it's all some kind of visual illusion. And I'm not to the point where I understand what it's trying to tell me. Like, there's an idea here, right? Like, something where maybe the world isn't as it seems to you, but I didn't get far enough or masterful enough to figure it out.
What was the phrase you used?
Well, okay, the phrase that the artist of the game uses is, it's non-Euclidean puzzles. Which, so, it's just abandon your concept that 10 feet in front of you will be ground that is 10 feet in front of you.
Right.
Yeah, just like it could be anywhere.
Yeah, forget the idea of persistent reality.
Yes.
Which is, it's so cool. Like, I've always wanted a game to do something like that, you know? Like,
it's definitely a cool idea. It's just can be difficult to wrap your head around what he says. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do have to, I mean, one of the solutions to a puzzle, like, 30 minutes in the game was right in front of you at the beginning. You just couldn't see it because it was like, well, it would be a spoiler to say so, but it was right there. You're looking at your way forward, but you can't see it because the game hasn't, like, revealed it to you. But it's there. You could totally skip the first hour of the game if you wanted to.
I wonder if we're going to finally get into the whole postmodern kind of period of gaming. You know, like, there's modern art and then postmodern art that is kind of impressionistic of art itself, where it's making a statement on art. And I mean, I guess we've hit that a little bit with BioShock.
Yeah, I think BioShock Infinite touched on that a bit.
Yeah, it's a little self-commentary, but I really would love to see us get into what's the kind of art movement where everything is, like, maybe abstract? Like an abstract thing or a...
Surreal?
Maybe surrealism.
Strange. Well, I mean, Hotline Miami is kind of a commentary on, like, modern-day violence, isn't it? I mean...
I haven't played it. I have it, but I haven't played it.
Well, I mean, I just know from what I've heard, like, the gratuitous amount of like 8-bit violence is it transcends just being a violent game and starts to become like a parody of how violent culture has become. I think
all the pig masks kind of give that away.
Well, yeah, that too. I mean, yeah, that's just, what is the deal with that? It's just grotesque. Like, the cover of the game, like, yeah, like pig masks, bird masks, like, I don't know what's going on there, but I'm interested in playing it.
Yeah, me too, definitely. Maybe that should be our homework for next week. Lane, do you have Hotline Miami?
I do.
We should all play it for next week.
I'm waiting for it to drop on PSN, which it is going to in, like, a couple months.
I forgot it's on PSN.
It will be. I mean, yeah, Sony showcased it in their Indiecade, I guess, at GDC when they had, like, 25 indie titles that they were working on in the next year or so. Stuff like Thomas Was Alone, that came out just the other day, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hotline Miami, Ibn Ob, like this colorful platformer. Like, lots of stuff to look forward to. I was thinking earlier today, actually, like, when are we going to get to this point where the word indie, like, the adjective indie as an indie game is, like, not used anymore because it's so proliferated. I'm starting to feel like we're there. Like, when someone says to me, Monaco is an indie platformer or whatever, you know, or, like, or whatever it was, I don't know.
Yeah,
well, yeah, well, like, where do you draw the line? Like, Monaco was designed by one person, and it shows, because it was in E3 for 3 years. How large does a group get before they're no longer?
I guess when do you stop calling them indie games, you just call them it's a game, where such and such happens.
I mean, you think something like Minecraft, that is indie, they do not have a publisher.
Yeah.
Because I think on Xbox Live, like, Microsoft technically publishes it, but...
And yet, I probably wouldn't dream of calling it... Like, if somebody asked me what's Minecraft, I wouldn't say it's an indie game. I'd say it's a PC game where you build all these things and it looks like a Lego set and whatever else. So.
Yeah, it's really interesting that I think. Oh, I'm getting a text and canceling it.
Damn it.
No, it's the indie games. I think for years that they weren't called indie games; they were just games. And I think now with the whole PC thing, indie has gotten the PC games specifically, I think, have seen this big, crazy resurgence of indie games in the past, 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, I think some of those next-gen tools are finally becoming, like, cheap enough and used enough that, like, people who are just getting into games, like, I mean, UDK and other stuff, and you can actually afford it now and start making something out of it.
Yeah, isn't Unreal 3, is that open and free now?
I don't want to say it's open and free, although the last time I checked was probably 3 years ago. It was, like, maybe $90 or $100 for the tool set.
Yeah, and you think, like, iPhone development, it's $100 for the tool set.
Okay.
You know? And, yeah, I think...
That's nothing. I mean, especially on the iPhone, like, where you... Well, you know, the iOS marketplace is weird, though, because you have to have buzz to make any kind of dent. But when you do have buzz, like, it's just... Like, you'll just... Like, your product is gonna...
Yeah, suddenly your Angry Birds and Tiny Wings and all those other bird-related phone games.
Exactly. You just need something, like, whether it's, like... You know what I bet? I bet for the iPhone games, like, your thumbnail is everything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you need to have a compelling, like, non-descriptive piece of art that at least grabs attention and makes people say, like, what is this, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I was looking at the Kindle Fire, the Amazon marketplace, earlier today, and they have Cut the Rope, Time, and it's like $1. It's like, oh, 5 stars. And then right next to it is Dino the Hungry Dinosaur with a similar spotted green reptile with an open mouth. And it's got, like, 1 star. Oh, it's just, like, trying to grab people and sucker them in. But,
yeah. But you need to do it the right way. Yeah, so it's a weird marketplace. And, like, the whole indie thing, I think, you know, there's room for success on any platform except Microsoft. Well, unless you've proven your worth to them from the get-go and they're willing to give you one of those, like, weekly slots to kind of put you at the front of the pack.
Yeah, the whole word indie, I think we're still going to see it around, but it's...
How long has it been a part of music?
Oh, like forever.
And there it almost is, like, it still means without a publisher, but it's almost more of a flavor of music at this point. It feels like more of a flavor of games at this point. You know it's going to be more puzzle-oriented, more story-oriented at this point.
I feel like it's still a compliment, or at least if you're to tell me that you're playing an indie game, like, I'm immediately more inclined to think it's good, but that will probably fade coming soon, because some of them won't be good. You know, 2 years down the line, if you say you're playing an indie game, I won't immediately assume it's this creative, super cool project, although many of them are.
Okay, I'll say this. If it's an indie game and you've heard of it, it's probably good. Unlike AAA games, because indie games don't have marketing budgets. That's why indie games has the good flavor. If you go on Steam and look for indie games, you'll find a lot of bad games. Probably a higher proportion than AAA games.
But that's won't hear talking then. Right. Your friends won't be talking about Dino the Hungry Dinosaur.
Yes.
Yeah. As for me, this week is, as usual... Actually, I came to the realization that the reason I haven't been playing many games in the last few weeks is I have this strange anxiety related to games, that I sit and I look at games and I think, man, I really want to play DMC that I have on loan, or I want to play Anarchy Reigns, or what else is over there?
XCOM,
I played both.
Oh, The Witcher 2!
Yeah, I want to play The Witcher 2, I'm sitting on all these great games that I want to play.
Okay, stop.
But every time I look at them, I think, like, man, that's going to take, like, 10 hours. I think, man, I should be working on my senior paper. I should be applying to jobs. But then instead of doing those things, I just sit there and look at the game.
If I ask out this girl I like, then I won't be able to go out with that one.
Yeah,
and you don't end up doing any of those.
Yeah, I just end up, like, reading Reddit or looking at Skullgirls forums and doing nothing.
Which isn't getting you anywhere in life.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I can sympathize with that a little bit. I mean, it's a little different. Because I have, like, assignments. Like, I need to play Star Trek, and that's kind of sucks. Like, I don't want to play Star Trek. But, I would like to be playing... I'd like to be playing Knights of the Old Republic, if it worked. I'd like to be playing The Witcher 2. Yeah. I have that on off of GOG. It was, like, $10 one weekend.
Yeah, that's sick. Man, PC... It's a great time to be a PC gamer. Yeah. Everything... Remember my Peter just bought Tomb Raider for, like, $16.
That's crazy talk. Yeah. That game is so worth it, too.
Yeah. And I mean, on top of that, you got Bioshock 1, $15 Green Man Gaming credit, and another free game, like, for $40.
That's bonkers, God.
Yeah, it was insane. So I haven't been playing any games, really. But I have been reading a ton. Instead of playing games, I'll read. So I've read through a whole bunch of issues of Venom. It's kind of this more recent comic book. It's Flash Thompson, the bully who bullied Peter Parker, is given the Venom symbiote. And I guess I'm not up and up on my Spider-Man lore, but he was a war hero who had his legs blown off. And so now he is a government agent who is given the Venom symbiote to go do missions.
This sounds crazy.
It sounds really dumb. And the first issue was really dumb.
I'm not going to lie, it sounds like fan fiction.
Yeah.
It sounds like, which Spider-Man fan fiction is among the worst fan fiction, I imagine.
Oh, I imagine that... You're familiar with Spider-Man fanfiction?
No.
Oh, God, no.
No, that's not me.
But,
why Flash? Like, why two people from the same high school?
I don't know, because the writers are really simple with their dualism like that. Like, the man who bullied Spider-Man and the man who is Spider-Man are enemies. You know, it's kind of interesting, but then, like, the first issue is so lame. It's, I'm gonna save the whole world as the superhero Venom, but I can't control it.
But now, wait a second, I mean, is this canon? I mean, it can't be, because wait, somebody else, isn't Brock somebody, like, Venom? Like,
I think he died. No, Brock, Not Samson. It's really hard to not say Samson. Eddie Brock.
Eddie Brock, that's it. Yeah.
And he had... I was reading up on this a little while ago. He had some kind of cancer that screwed with his adrenal gland that the suit fed off of, and then he died or something. And then the Venom symbiote went to Mac Gargan, the Scorpion, which is kind of neat, and now it's on Flash Thompson.
Strange.
Yeah.
This is a really recent development, though, right?
Pretty recent, like, I think 2011 or so.
Of course, aren't there also recent developments where, like, Peter Parker...
died.
Yeah,
Peter Parker dies, but then he's really Dr. Octopus, but really he isn't, and just all kinds of gobbledygook.
God, that's messed up.
Yeah, and it's been okay so far. I'm only, like, 6 issues in. It starts off really, really lame, and really quickly turns pretty cool, where it is he's, like, getting addicted to the suit. It's like, oh, this is kind of interesting, but...
cool.
Yeah.
You guys watched anything on TV lately? Any shows? Any long-term stuff?
Not really, no.
Yeah, just the Game of Thrones.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yes.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, is there up on
episode that? 3 of this season?
Beautiful!
That shit was tight!
Yes.
God damn.
Yeah, having suffered through season 2, man, this is life, right?
Yeah, season 2 was low. Season 2 wasn't as bad as The Walking Dead season 2.
Ooh!
But there aren't a lot of things that were as bad as The Walking Dead season 2.
Is Walking Dead season 2 as bad as the finale of Walking Dead season 1? I really didn't like it. Where they go to the CDC, I hated that episode.
No, I liked that episode, actually. Really? Yeah, I kind of thought that was an interesting, like, it was an interesting break from the cross-country apocalyptic journey, I thought, getting a bunker down in a place. I hated how it ended, because I actually want good things to happen to that group, although I know that's never going to happen.
Yeah, that's not what The Walking Dead is.
No, but I mean, actually, season 3 was a huge jump forward from season 2, but... I really need to not watch TV shows, like, live on their networks, because it's just it sucks so badly.
Yeah,
when you're trying to watch, like, when you're trying to watch the latest Walking Dead episode on AMC, and you're getting, like, every 15 minutes, you're getting this huge commercial break, where not only do they play regular commercials, which is fine, like, I get that, it's advertising, but they're, like, breaking down the illusion of The Walking Dead with, like, play The Walking Dead game on AMC.com. Yeah. Zombify yourself with the iPhone.
Oh,
I'm
my,
like,
God.
There's nothing that pulls me out of a show more than that. Like, I have serious trouble watching something that's not, like, on Netflix, or I'm not streaming it from somewhere else. Which is why it took me so long to, like, finally watch The Killing. Like, I'm watching season 2 of The Killing on Netflix, and that took, like, a year to come over from TV. Yeah, finally catch up on that. And Arrested Development. I'm watching Arrested Development for the first time to celebrate the oncoming season.
I'm so happy for you.
I decided. I was like, this could not be a better time to, like, finally see what all the fuss was about. Mm-hmm.
To get shitty and high-minded, I think that might be the voice of our generation. Arrested Development.
I don't know. That's high praise. I don't know if I would echo that, but...
That is, like... my favorite comedy show, and it's funny in all the ways that I enjoy it. Like, really subtle, repeated viewing, great, not quite controversial humor, but things like that. But
yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's not 7 p.m. like CBS humor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
The
Blue Family is
take my wife, please.
Yeah, they jump the gamut from like. Well-meaning to just plain racist from episode to episode. But it's like, I know what you're saying, right? I get the feeling watching them that they're the kind of things that would not only hold up to repeat viewings, but like get better over time. Because there's a lot of things, like all this kind of like the foreshadowing and the in-jokes and like the stupid little connections to like 20 episodes prior that comes up again. It's like, it's just really, really cool. Like, really thoughtful, but also just kind of like fuck it comedy. You know?
I've always thought that show, it wasn't meant for TV. Like, it's meant to sit and watch a whole season in a chunk. And kind of by that, it's the perfect Netflix show.
Mm-hmm.
It's the perfect, no commercials, no breaks, you just shit right through.
Oh yeah, that's another, I couldn't imagine watching it with commercials.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine watching that show like, oh, this episode ends where Buster gets his hand cut off.
Like, right? And you just, don't...
Like, that's just how it ends.
Makes a lot of sense, then, why it maybe didn't stick around for so long. Because
it
blew my mind that it was, like canceled because it wasn't popular enough. Like, I couldn't understand how it wouldn't
just
be.
Imagine those jokes that they set up well beforehand, not coming to fruition until 20 human weeks later.
Just
doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, it's a great show that you power through it in a weekend.
Definitely.
And I remember they made a great joke about that in, like, season 3, where it's like, oh, well, it looks like this group doesn't want us. Where should we go? He's like, well, how about the Home Builders Organization? They're like, no, they're not going to take us. HBO doesn't want us. It's like, well, I guess it's showtime. We got to put on a show. And like, they're just making jokes at, like, what network is going to take them. It's great.
It's too bad, though. I know I've only got, like, 5 or 6 left because season 3 is kind of truncated.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm kind of knee-deep in the Rita saga right now, so...
Oh, you haven't seen that come to the end, have you?
No, it's to the point where she's been labeled as the mentally retarded female.
Yeah, as the, was it the MRF or something?
Yep,
yeah,
yep.
On her wristband.
For British eyes only.
Yeah, you are living 2003. It's great. Man.
It's great stuff, though. Yeah, well, just been watching a lot of shows like that. I want to start The Following, but... Fox has made it impossible to watch the pilot by any legal means.
Oh.
Unless you buy it. But, I mean,
yeah.
Like, I've been looking for it on streaming services and stuff, and you just can't. So.
You know, it's really interesting that Amazon is now doing it where any, I think it might be any Prime member or just any member can watch. They have a whole slew of pilots that they're funding, and then depending on how profitable and how many views they get on their service, they'll fund the whole show.
I'm a Prime member.
Yeah.
You can check this shit out.
Go for it. I got my Kindle, it's actually downstairs, where it's one of the ads that pop up.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, and it's like the Zombieland TV show is one of them.
No way.
Yeah.
Any actors from the movie?
I'm pretty sure none. Jesse Eisenberg is too busy rolling in his social network money.
Well, I mean, I heard that was part of the deal of, like, season 4 Arrested Development. Like, they're doing this format where each episode is more or less focusing on, like, one character. I mean, and there will be other characters together in an episode, but they're doing that because, like... the people have less time to do the show than they did, you know,
because they're all
7 years ago.
They're all pretty successful. I mean, I don't know what Michael Cera's doing besides signing things at Scott Pilgrim concerts.
Maybe he's not doing anything. I don't know who that actress is.
Yeah, I don't either.
No, she's not.
Yeah, Michael Cera went off to be mildly successful, but...
Yeah. At least kind of... His whole Juno shtick is kind of old now, I think.
Yeah. His whole I am this character forever shtick. So that's what we've been playing. We're going to go out on a break. What do you guys think we should have for the break music? Kyle, you're our guest.
Do we have any Bohemian Rhapsody?
Oh, that's... We blew our Queen load last week, actually. Didn't we?
No.
Okay. It's going to be Bohemian Rhapsody taking us out. That Queen classic. God, I'm so sad Freddie Mercury died. All right. We'll see you guys on the other side. Mama, just killed a man. Put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama. Alright, taking us back in is probably going to be Bohemian Rhapsody, sure. Queen classic. We listened to it earlier in the car. That song is great. So sad that Freddie Mercury died. I'm pretty sure I said that on the way out. Taking us back in, we have someone a little different, someone a little less white.
And someone who's also... PSU related.
Well, thanks for ruining my rules of threes there. But with us, we have Ernest Lynn, regular guest from PlayStationUniverse.com, taking the place of Kyle Prawl, who has to go see Matt Kearney. I don't know who Matt Kearney is, I'm sorry.
He's like, well known, but I don't think he's anything to get excited about.
Kearney, is that the architect of the PS4?
What? Oh,
no,
yeah!
No, no.
Yeah.
Is that the
Shit,
same
that's
guy?
Right! Yeah, there's Matt Kearney, the PS4 guy.
Yeah. Is that not the right Matt Kearney?
That is a different...
So the guy from PSU goes to meet Matt Kearney, and it's not that guy.
Oh my god.
Let's sit over here now.
We're going to have to submit this to N4G. This is big news.
This is big news. Matt Kearney plays at Spring Fest, Spring Jam, UMN. It doesn't design the PS4.
But yeah, that's where he's gone. He'll be back later, though not on the podcast. We're going to... That always falls. Every episode, someone knocks
it
over.
Put that somewhere else.
Goes right there.
Okay.
Yeah, Kyle Prawl is going to be back later to drink margaritas with me, so ha-ha for you guys. You don't get to drink margaritas with a cool guy.
Margaritas at the Midnight Buffet. Margaritas at the Midnight Buffet. I don't know what that lyric is from.
Neither do I.
This
Stop
just popped
it.
In my head. We're going to have to look at that on the break.
No, we won't.
We'll research it for you.
For you, the listener. Taking us back in is news and cool things like that from the past week. And with us is the news hound, Ernest Lynn, who looks really surprised.
Oh. Okay, well, let's just say...
Just off the top of your head, what's the
big news?
Off the
top of my head, we've got initial reactions to Iron Man 3 screening so far.
and early like critic reviews are starting to trickle in.
Uh-huh.
And it's positive. Last time I checked, it was in the somewhere in the lower 90s on Rotten Tomatoes, which is good for a film.
Do you know films have the same weird stipulations of games sometimes too? That if your review is below a certain number, you cannot publish it? Because I could
see that as a no. I feel like film criticism has moved on beyond that point, which game criticism still is kind of stuck in,
mm-hmm.
where you are just not looked at upon as like a legitimate organization
mm-hmm.
or reviewer when you reach that threshold of 7-6.
But there's no reason to do that in statistical averaging in Rotten Tomatoes, because that compresses everything to a yes or a no.
Yeah, positive or negative. And I love that system. I wish games would use that system, because it's more indicative of how much you're going to enjoy or not.
The critical and the user rating is definitely even more.
That's always
100% good and 95% bad.
That's always really weird for user reviews, especially like something on Metacritic where you get stupid, idiot, internet, fucking brain-dead monster flame wars.
Yeah.
Of like, this game shouldn't be on PS3. 1 out of 10. Like, what are you doing? Stop it.
Yeah, user reviews are just bad garbage.
So tell us, Ernest, why is Oremo having a PS Vita, not a PlayStation Vita?
It's a news? PS Vita.
Why is that news?
I think it's news because
you have to explain it for Lane and also everyone else in the world.
What is a PS Vita?
A BS Vita. So often in anime, they can't get the licensing rights to have the actual product name. So you see bootleg-like names like Samsung instead of Samsung.
It's an official Sony.
yeah. Or Somi is another one you see a lot. And so in this anime called Oremo, which is about otaku and gaming.
Our listeners know what Oremo is.
You can look it up. They featured basically a PlayStation Vita device in it. And that was like part of the plot point, because the main character was obsessed with a game that was on it. But they had to rename it, so it was BS Vita.
What was the name of that game?
Love Touch.
Not Love Plus.
Not Love Plus. Love Touch. And also, PlayStation Network was called Boom Style Network.
Wow, that's a better
which
name.
Which is a little bit. A little less obvious, but Why am I talking about this? Why is it news?
Yeah, this was a news story on PlayStationUniverse.com, and Ernest wrote up a news story, and the first comment was, why is this news?
No. It was, like, the second comment. I think it was news, one, weekend. Slow news day. Two, I don't think I've seen, at least from my knowledge, or heard of a PlayStation Vita, even, like, lookalike or something, appear in an anime, and it's just kind of an interest article.
Besides the Vitas that I, you, and Kyle Prawl own, I've never seen a Vita in the wild. Anyways, what else is in the news this week?
Well, I guess the biggest news. Microsoft finally said, alright,
they announced an announcement.
Is a next Xbox, and we're going to be revealing it at our corporate campus in Kirkland, Washington on May 21st. It's going to be live on Spike. They're really amping this up. It's going to be live on Spike. It's going to be live online. It's going to be live on your Xbox Live.
Yeah, I mean...
Except, think about this. This doesn't make sense to me. It is being shown at 10 a.m. Pacific time.
Wait.
Who is home?
What time is that for us? We're on Central Pacific is West Central. Coast?
Yeah, that is noon our time. That is a bad time. Because especially compared to the PS4 announcement, that made more sense. 6 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
That made more sense. I don't know if it's going to be this, if they're going to make it a larger event where the journalists there will get to spend the day maybe doing a little hands-on. Who knows? Like, it is interesting that this is a little more, a smaller event from what it sounds like. Not as much of, like, a big ballroom as, like, the PS4 announcement was, but this is their corporate campus. Only some of the big press outlets were
so
invited.
PSU is not invited.
PSU is not invited.
PSU's not invited.
Yeah. Does that make sense? That does not make sense to me.
Yeah, you could go in and talk about how shitty it is compared to the PS4.
I'm actually excited for it. Don't tell any of my, any of my colleagues, but I am really, really looking forward to seeing.
You heard it here first. Xbox Ernest Lin, editor for PlayStationUniverse.com.
I am an enemy planted in your midst.
So news has been kind of light these past couple of weeks. It's been, I think a lot of people are sitting on their stuff until E3.
Yeah, in terms of gaming news, I feel, you know, the rest of the stuff is just minor news.
Mm-hmm.
One more tidbit about movie news is that they released the full title of the Michael Bay Ninja Turtles movie.
Oh, God.
And it's back to being Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
What the hell was it?
Well, before it was just like Ninja Turtles or something. And the rumor was that they were going to be, the origin story was being changed that they were aliens.
What was the movie we were joking at lunch about? The PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale movie is just going to be called All-Stars, and it's going to be directed by Christopher Nolan. It's that gritty reboot. The title of
this
is fake. We just made this up.
Well, this came about because I started talking to Kyle.
Turn off your business voice.
I started talking to him about the Ratchet and Clank animated movie that's coming to theaters in like 2015. And also the Heavenly Sword movie, which is just a direct-to-video. And I said, like, it's been stirring in my mind ever since that was announced, that I want a PlayStation Avengers-esque movie.
And how did you describe it at lunch? I think it was...
I started just making sounds. I think I was trying to recreate... Or not recreate, because it hasn't been created. Try to sort of encapsulate... Late. I can write words. Encapsulate the pure, amazing, exciting, enthralling, and emotional experience you will be getting.
You pulled this out of them, Kevin.
I did. You're responsible for this moment. What have I done?
What have I created? But that's where I think it's possible. Beat Nintendo, and they can say, hey, we copy Nintendo with PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. Yes. No, we... But! Did Nintendo do a movie?
I'm excited for...
Boom! No, and guess what? Sony? Who do they own? Columbia TriStar Pictures? Oh!
That's...
Already got that in line. Nintendo has to find a studio to do. That's the one thing that Sony has above Nintendo and Microsoft, I think. Yeah. Is licensing their properties for movies is easy. It is much easier for them because they are in the movie business.
That's true.
Yeah. Wink.
Wink?
Just seemed appropriate.
They're in the movie business, if you know what I mean. Wink.
Movies.
So we decided that they had dropped Teenage Mutant because no adult would go see a teenage movie. No normal would go see a mutant movie.
No mere human.
It's like how John Carter was cut off at the balls because nobody would see a movie called Martian Princess.
Is that what it was originally called?
That's what the book is called, yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so they call it John Carter.
Have you seen that movie?
No.
Okay.
I've heard it's good.
Because it was called fucking John Carter. Why am I going to go see that movie?
I don't know. I kind of wanted to see it, but then when the negative reviews, it kind of turned me off. I got to watch it one of these days.
Yeah.
Evaluate for myself.
I could watch Cloud Atlas. I downloaded that. I haven't watched it, though. It's a Blu-ray I bought.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's not out on Blu-ray.
I bought it from Russia. Moving on. News has been kind of slow.
Yeah, I think that's about it. That's all I have for you guys. I'm sorry.
Nothing you guys can think of?
Thief got delayed.
Yeah. Dishonored 2 has got delayed.
Dishonored 2.
Why do people call it that?
Is that a thing?
I have the unpopular opinion that I don't think Dishonored is that good of a game.
Yeah, you,
and I'm glad that Lane also shares that sentiment with me.
You know, I heard Dishonored goes somewhere like TimMoon.com. You read Lane review.
That's probably the max I've given. Just it feels like it's just trying too hard to be other games.
Mm.
I want it to find its own identity. I thought it was going to be.
That's some pretty good enunciation for a man who couldn't say encapsulation
five minutes ago. That's a hard word. That's like tarantula.
Ernest.
Which gave me a hard time up until I was a teenager.
Did you feel like the first part of that game tried really hard to impress you, like once you first get the powers? Like, they put so much good content into that moment, but if you play like an hour after that, you just see the same stuff.
Yeah, it's the same stuff, and I got bored.
Yeah.
I just got flat out bored. And I'm like, there's nothing driving me here. The story, I don't think, is that. It's generic, and it's not driving me.
But Thief! Holy shit, that game is different. Every level, start to finish.
True next gen.
You don't know anything about Thief, Ernest.
No, we're talking about Thief the first one. You ever play that? Anybody?
No. I played three.
Or am I all alone?
I played Thief 3.
Because in Thief 1, you start out as Garrett, the adventurer, skulking through the city streets. But so by the end, you're fighting against some occult shit. That game is very, very different start to finish. Which in Dishonored, you play against the same dudes the whole way
through. Yeah. Do you have a robot eye in Thief?
Yeah, you have a magic bow. That's hot
in
now.
In Thief 3, you have a robot.
Bows are in this season.
Yeah, bows are hot shit. We're five... Last year, it was... What was the big thing last year? Dogs were really big a couple of years ago.
It's definitely bows. This year is definitely bows so far.
Crisis,
Tomb Raider.
Hunger Games. Hunger Games, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
I've seen the cover of that movie.
Jennifer Lawrence. Oof, man, just don't get me started.
How old is she, Ernest?
She is like 20.
Okay. I think
she's like 20-something.
Wow. Well, 20-something is a long range.
Yeah, that's true.
Early 20s, I think she is. She's legal. Okay?
Again, to read off some Ernest quotes. I think I have one of them memorized. My cousin who lives in Berkeley, I'd hit that.
I don't feel like we're related. It just feels like...
feels right.
Okay, let me explain this to the audience.
Moving on.
Hold on. Just a little... It just feels like it's a parent's friend's daughter. Just like my parent's friend's daughter. And we're somehow related. So
as Venture Brothers phrased it, you would have crazy retard babies.
In Japan, isn't it legal that you can first cousins?
In many states.
Many states, even.
There you go. You found your out. Go to the South. You'll be fine.
Some problems.
Not
there.
The South, Massachusetts and Connecticut.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh, wow, I did not know.
Go to Boston.
You don't need to know how I know that.
Don't worry, Lane. I've had long nights on Wikipedia as well.
Yes.
Moving on to our topic of the week.
Topic of the week.
And right now we're kind of stuck between two topics. I'm not sure which one should we do.
Should we do both of them.
Both.
Have a double episode.
How could we merge them? I forget what the second one was.
The nostalgia one.
Yeah.
I feel like the nostalgia one would be more fun with more people, though.
Nostalgia about community content. Wasn't the original Dota shitty, you guys? It was so fun.
I know, right?
It was hard.
No, let's save nostalgia, because I think that would be really fun with a lot of people.
Yes. That's one that you need a big group.
Look forward to probably next week, maybe the week after that, we'll be talking about community content. And how cool it is, how stupid it is.
Wait, we're doing nostalgia now?
Yes, nostalgia now.
I thought we were doing nostalgia later.
Wait.
Yeah, everybody's got a nostalgia story. Let's do community content.
Okay, we're going to do community content, because I think everyone has a story for that. Community, I'm a little drunk. Nostalgia we'll do next week when we have a lot of people. Yeah. The lane stops knocking things over.
So, community content.
I really want to hear what Ernest Lin, Mr. Marketing, has to say.
Community content, it's an interesting phenomenon. Right?
Lane, you used to do Warcraft 3 mods, didn't you?
Yes, yeah.
Tell us about that. How was that? Was that fun?
Oh, it was the stupidest thing I've ever done.
What kind of stuff did you do?
Well, we decided that, like, high school friends and I, that we needed new races to add to Warcraft 3.
That's kind of cool.
Kind of.
Did you have a race that was all wisps?
Oh no! We had the slaves race.
What
your heroes could carry around a slave in a barrel. You could click the barrel and create a slave worker for you. There's a reason that so many Warcraft 3 maps are good, because it's so easy for people to get into and get started with that. But so many are shitty for exactly the same reason. But people have asked, like, why StarCraft doesn't have good mods. It's because it's ridiculously hard.
Is it?
Never tried.
Yeah, I remember before StarCraft came out, there was a lot of talk about like how great their modding tools are.
Yeah, I remember all that. But what makes it so hard?
Well, okay, they're powerful in the same way that like the Half-Life 2 mods are powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And the modding tools for that are extremely powerful because you could do literally anything in StarCraft or in Half-Life 2. Warcraft was more limited, but it was also more hand-holdy. You could do less, but it told you how to do more.
Yeah, it was pretty basic scripting, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It was less actual coding and more like, if this, that.
Yes, it was like, compare GarageBand to like Audacity or something, or Cool Edit. The first one gives you most everything and kind of puts things together for you, but you end up being able to produce much less of your own creativity.
Cool.
But it's an enormous restriction to have to come up with everything and do everything yourself.
When you said you made a slave race, I assumed you made a race out of all builders.
Did I say that I made a slave race?
Yeah.
I mean a race
of slaves
in the same way that human or orcs are races in that game. Like, you could choose at the beginning of the game, I will play the race that is the slavers.
Lane Davis endorsed slaving on LinkedIn.
Yeah, but what if they don't care? What if it's good for them? Just a hypothetical question.
Let's
engineer people who wanted to be slaves, it would be okay, right?
It would be 1984. No, Brave New World.
Brave New World.
I gotta mix up.
And there's an anime about that. Dear S. Have you ever watched that?
No, tell us. Is it terrible?
Is
it about how Japanese engineer Americans to be their slaves?
It's very Chobits-esque. It was trying to be Chobits. Oh. And it was about these aliens, these hot female aliens, of course, Japan, who wanted to serve humanity. Like, wherever they land, they want to serve, and that's how they're happy.
Wow. You know, actually, in a...
some feminist commentary right there. Now that you think about it.
In Dragon's Dogma, there was the pawns that are like...
Did you hear about that?
It was, you'd get these, essentially, slaves who fill out your party. They're not player characters, but they're just NPCs. And you can name them, do whatever you want to them. And in the game, they're like, oh yeah, pawns, they will just stand in place until you tell them to do something. They are complete blank slates until you ask them to do things. And it's so bizarre. And I think it was my roommate Peter who pointed this out, like, yeah, they just created a perfect slave race for you to work with. That's kind of, like, a little creepy.
I think slavery has this negative connotation.
Let's let this linger.
But what if, let's just say hypothetically, what if there was just some race or species or whatever that liked it?
I do guess.
Like, I mean.
I guess some people like getting their balls stepped on.
I mean, let's just think about it. Aren't a lot of dogs kind of like that?
Slaves?
Kind of. Like, we,
yeah.
Yeah, if you think about it.
But they're
all beasts of burden. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
That is the perfect word.
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
Don't twist my leg.
Any domesticated animal...
Carry my bags, slave.
...is essentially a slave.
Let me put on the pimp hat.
And, you know, what's jarring for people is if it looks human. If it looks humanoid. And I wonder if that's something that we're going to have problems with once we come to that technological leap.
When scientists allow us to turn horses into humans,
we'll just feel awful.
Yeah. I'd feel so
bad. Like robots, you know.
Yeah, like if we get robots that look like people and you're like, hey man, carry these bags. Yeah. He's like, yes, master.
And
like,
I'm sure there'll be, you know, philosophers and psychiatrists who are like, no, this is not bad because you're simulating being bad to, like, what looks like a human, you might be bad towards other people, you know. Who knows?
What was our topic again? Community content? Now we're like, the philosophy of robots.
You guys,
of
slavery. We're a part robotics. Of the community. We can do anything we want.
Holy shit. Let's write fan fiction about iRobot and Will Smith wearing Converse. That's the direction.
But yeah, anyone have it? You want
to? So to a degree, community content is the reason Windows is still the boss.
Really?
Because people have made the most shit for Windows.
That's true.
And so if you want shit, you use Windows.
Yeah. And if you want nothing, you use a Macintosh.
Like, people don't buy Warcraft 3 for the Warden and the Demon Hunter anymore. People get it for the Dota.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like Windows because I can install a variety of applications.
What sorts of applications, Ernest?
Now, how far do we call something community content? Like, do we call a tournament that's held off-site as community content?
That's a good point.
Like, in a sense, the only reason that any Blizzard game does well is because of the fostering of community and, like, trading hubs that form around them.
I think
so. Are we talking about, like, digital content?
Is that what we're trying
to focus on?
I suppose.
Maps and... Levels.
I mean, like, specifically with Blizzard, I think they do a pretty good job of setting up the infrastructure. So communities can just say, hey, let's run a StarCraft tournament. And it's really easy to do that. You know, like, instant invites to games, things like that. Diablo, join lobby, etc. It's really easy to do things like that. Like, they give you all the tools. And I mean, like, to kind of go off that, Ernest, I know you're a PlayStation fan.
I'm not a PlayStation fanboy. I'm a PlayStation fan. There's a difference.
I didn't say fanboy.
I'm just clarifying.
Anyways, there's a lot of PlayStation games that are really hitting that community note. Like Little Big Planet, Infamous 2, Mod Nation Racers.
Even Hatsune Miku, those games, which are on PlayStation platforms, do have, I guess you would call them level creators, where you create stages, you know?
Yeah.
What else?
I mean, do you guys think that putting in community-driven tools is an excuse to kind of leave a certain degree, to leave a part of the game open up to the player? Like, Little Big Planet 2, I was playing it, like, oh, this is really fun. But then every 5 minutes, it felt like it was giving me another tool and saying, go build a level using this. Like, it was almost leaving half of the game up to me. You guys agree with something like that?
I can kind of understand that. Where you're coming from, feeling like that.
It's a quality multiplier. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have a terrible game and you have the ability for people to add stuff to it, it's not going to make it good, except for KOTOR 2. However, in every other source, it's a game that's been kind of hammered out. There are no bugs in that, and that's why the mods work so well, and they're so easy to make stuff for that game. I think if we look at, like, Half-Life 2... wasn't a terrible game, and it's just the ability to generate new content for it has multiplied its lifespan. And I think that there's no terrible game that has great content.
Yeah, and you were talking earlier about kind of barriers to entry. Like, StarCraft's level editor is really difficult.
Yes.
But then you look at things like Gmod, that kind of takes the source engine and makes it much more palatable to the everyday person. They can say, spawn head crab, and you click a button and it spawns a head crab. You can say, glue this to this, and you can build crazy... Rube Goldberg contraptions within it. That was really hard to say. And, yeah, like, I think that's really interesting. It is, like you said, a quality multiplier. That you think, like, the Source Engine... It's also kind of interesting. The Source Engine hasn't really made that many games using the Source Engine. Like, there's a bunch of mods and stuff, but there's relatively few games that are kind of built around the Source.
Hmm.
You know, there's, like, the ship, I guess.
The Stanley Parable... Counter-Strike, would you call that a mod or a standalone game?
Counter-Strike is...
I think it's evolved enough that it is a game.
I mean, even going beyond mods, there aren't that many games that license the Source Engine. And it's kind of curious why. Do you guys have any inclusion?
I think it's old, to be honest. I think it's a little old.
That's pretty true, but Valve was all about the incremental squeezing new junk in there instead of doing Unreal 3.0, Unreal 4.0.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And it's the one part of the Valve business plan I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand what they're doing with the Source Engine. Yeah, they haven't had Source 2.0 already.
Yeah, to say, like, here is Source, and we'll keep adding chunks to it, but at some point that Jenga tower is going to fall down when you pull out too many chunks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, at what point is it worth changing so many old technologies to make it work for modern things?
Yeah.
That it's no longer worth it to use the same engine.
I mean, maybe they are working on something incredible, but as of now, I feel like they've been a little slow.
I really hope we see something from Valve at E3.
I hope so. Gabe Newell on stage.
Gabe Newell on...
the Sony conference.
Oh, wait. Microsoft. Microsoft or Sony, we're taking a bet now. Which one do you think it's going to be, listeners? Microsoft or Sony? Leave a comment, etc. You guys know where to find us. No, you don't. You will at the end of the show, though. But yeah, like, community-driven content is, like, this really weird, interesting beast, you know? of like.
I think it's interesting when the original designers of the game go and use it to outsource additional content.
Mm-hmm.
The Halo series does that, where they have the Forge tools to build levels. Multiplayer levels, and then sometimes if they're good enough, they'll even throw them into playlists.
Yeah,
which is really
like,
cool.
Famously, Red versus Blue with Griffball, which is
that was a whole community outsource sort of game mode.
Yeah, the Red versus
Zombies too is another one.
Yeah, I remember hearing about Zombies. And in like Halo 2, they started doing it, and it was really kind of like ghetto and busted. That you, if you died as a human. You had to manually change teams, use the sword, and walk only. Like, it was really...
honor-based.
Yeah, it was, like, very honor system.
Yeah. And now Halo 4 has...
It is built
in. It's built in and has, like, its own... When you're a zombie, you have...
You look zombie-ish.
You look zombie-ish. You have a character model to reflect that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of any games that have... The closest thing I could think of...
CSGO?
I don't know if CSGO has any community support.
But it is entirely taken from the community.
Yeah. Is it?
Well, there is no original content there. There is some cleaning up, but there is all the maps are taken from.
Oh, Counter-Strike is a big source of just community.
Absolutely.
They have some of the best maps are fan-made and just a lot of fun.
Honestly, there's a bunch of, somewhere on the internet, there's some weird little corner and nugget of games that are really great RPGs made in RPG Maker. Like, really great.
There are a couple out
there. I've heard,
some that are on Steam, actually.
Really?
Like, To the Moon is RPG.
Is it?
Maker game. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's games that use these open source, these visual novel games that use open source engines that, there's a few of them that are supposed to be legitimately good.
Hmm.
Which I think is really interesting then.
What was Katwa Shoujo made in? You know?
I don't know which engine they use for that.
Lane, are you familiar with Katwa Shoujo?
I'm not. I'm just going to say, though, RPG is a great, like, guess for where to find good content, because that relies so much on the strength of writing. Like, To the Moon is not a pretty game.
Yeah.
But what is Katwa Shoujo?
Katwa Shoujo is... I don't know what Katwa means.
The name literally means, like, disabled girl. And its name got controversy because that sort of translation has a negative context. To it.
It does.
Yeah, and it is a crowdsource produced game where it was started on 4chan and all these people decided, we'll collaborate and do this. So artists, programmers, writers, composer,
came
together.
That's a great example of like a pretty successful community thing, but then...
The problem with it, though, I've heard, is at times you can tell that there's different directions that the game is trying to go in.
Yeah.
That it doesn't have this consistent, aligned direction that it's trying to go in.
Yeah,
that some things don't quite match with others.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something I kind of anticipated that you would get, just not being able to have all the constant communication that you would working in.
There not one person in a role of the designer who gets to decide which pieces go in?
I'm not sure either.
I'm sure maybe there was, but maybe they were too nice. You know, sometimes you need an asshole in charge. That's what we got with Steve Jobs.
Yeah, Ernest. You're off the cast.
I've heard he was just an asshole to work with. But he got stuff done, and he managed to keep Apple's quality standard that high. And now that he's gone, we have the...
The iPhone 5, it's
iPhone
taller.
5, we had the scuff gate where phones were being shipped already scratched on like the sides. And Apple Maps.
I hate that it was called scuff gate.
And I feel like that kind of stuff would not have flown with Steve Jobs.
Yeah, like there's famously the story of Steve Jobs. He's playing with an iPhone prototype and he had it in his pocket with his keys. And it had a plastic screen at the time, like the original iPhone. And he storms into an office and says, "This shouldn't happen." And so because of that, he demanded they use really high-quality glass screens. And to this day, that's what they use.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, it shows. Like, I've had an iPod for 2 years, and it doesn't have a scratch on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you need an asshole, and I think maybe with community-driven stuff like that, there's a little bit of a problem, unless someone kind of...
Unless it's all created by one person.
Yeah. In which case, that gets into the really weird thing of the indie community. I don't know if you were here for this earlier, Ernest. we're talking about, like, what is indie? You know, like, is one guy making a game? That's not a community-driven thing. Or, like...
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Like, how... Where do you draw the line for it to be indie? Mm. You know, just... Is just being an independent company, like that game company, considered real indie?
And they just had a contract with Sony.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
They weren't.
Or if it's just one person, like, I don't know, Phil Fish or something.
Yeah.
Primarily. I think people like the idea of one person only working on it or mostly working on most of it.
Only one person working on it.
Only one person working on it.
There it is. Because the way you said it, it sounds like one person only working, that all he's doing is working on it.
Have you seen Indie Game, the movie?
I haven't.
That's pretty much how that works.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, the person basically just does the game. Yeah.
Only one person only working on it.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Boom, editorship, keep going.
Whatever, I'm... I'm going through drafts here. I'm drinking, too. I don't write when I'm drinking. But I think people like that because it's romanticized as being more personal.
Yeah.
As being like, oh, this is, no one else saw it. This is just straight from that creator himself.
Yeah, there's a little bit of, like, authorship in there, you know, of like, oh, Hemingway sat down and wrote this. Like, it's not, he sat down with 10 guys and said, what should the first chapter be?
Yeah. And I think it's a bit misleading. Like, I think if the creator's strong enough, he can put his own stamp on whatever he makes. And the people who work on it, they don't influence it as much. That they're there to code. Mm-hmm. They're there to make the game animate and move.
How many creators from that can you name right now that are in multi-million dollar publishing companies?
Few.
Like, okay, so I'll take Ken Levine from you.
That's
Go.
What I was thinking.
Go.
Hideo Kojima.
Hideki Kamiya.
Are we going around?
I'm not. No, I'm challenging you guys. Like, you got two. You got two.
Shigeru Miyamoto. You know, Suda 51.
Shinji Mikami.
When was the last time Shigeru Miyamoto made a new character?
Shigeru Miyamoto.
Yeah.
Pikmin, probably.
Pikmin.
Wow. 2000.
Early 2000. 2001, 2003, maybe. Around there. Early 2000s. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been a while, but.
You're telling me the dogs and Nintendo dogs don't count?
It was great reading the thing about that, that, like, yeah, I came up with the idea of Nintendogs when I was playing with my dogs.
Yeah. And then he got a cat, and so he's like, oh,
Nintendo cats.
Cat.
Yeah,
Nintendo. And he got into gardening, so Pikmin.
Yep.
It's pretty funny.
People who are creative drives. Ken Levine. I can't think of any white guys. I think of a lot of Japanese guys who are, like, very famous public heads of studios.
Like Gabe Newell.
Yeah, I guess.
Cliff Bleszinski.
Formerly.
What do you mean, formerly? Yeah, he's retired. You know, he's just taking
If you made the second most successful Xbox franchise, and you could retire at 30, you would.
Yeah, but I think it'll come down the road where he will want to get back in.
Oh, Peter Moore.
Peter
Molyneux.
Peter Molyneux. Not Peter Moore.
And even, like, all of these games are huge. Like, Bioshock Infinite's credits was, like, 15 minutes. It was so long.
Granted, you have to take into account that those credits do include stuff like the accounting department.
True.
And the various localization teams in the different countries.
When you think,
like most big-budget AAA titles, you'll see that, where it's like, Japan unit, France unit.
Yeah, but then you think, like, specifically with Bioshock, you think, like, how many people had creative influence on that game? Let's say concept artists, level designers, sound designers, casting directors, voice actors, creative directors. Like, that's six categories of different kinds of people.
That could influence. But I feel, again, like I said with Steve Jobs, is if you're a strong enough person and strong enough conviction, you will make sure that it doesn't change how you want it.
You make sure it follows the path.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, Ken Levine, I've listened to the Irrational Interviews podcast, which is fantastic. It's just Ken Levine interviewing famous people like Guillermo del Toro. I can't do that whole rolling R's and drunk. But, he interviews him and talks about, like, being a strong creative head of things. And, yeah, he's really interesting. But then you think, Like, how much stuff did Ken Levine have to cut? BioShock Infinite, I showed this to Lane, and I think Ernest, you'd seen it before.
Yeah, I've seen
after that. Our spoiler cast, all of the content that wasn't in the game, like the whole thing with the horse and Return of the Revenge of the Jedi, the weird alternate reality, and that's, think of how much stuff he had to cut and how much stuff he had to say that has to be in. You know, like BioShock 1, I remember hearing him say when he came up with the idea for BioShock 1, he had, okay, spoilers for BioShock 1, I suppose. Lane, have you played it?
Yes.
Do you mind for spoilers then?
Oh, please, spoil me.
Yeah. Okay. There's the part where Andrew Ryan says, "Would you kindly murder me?" Or something along those lines, doesn't he?
Something, yeah.
And Ken Levine said, "At the very beginning, I had that idea in my head. And throughout the whole development, a bunch of stuff changed, but that's the one thing that stayed consistent. That because of that, because of Ken Levine, he kept that really important, really impactful scene, you know?"
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe
The most memorable scene.
Definitely.
Game, yeah.
One of the most memorable.
Yeah.
You think, I don't know what that's going to be for BioShock Infinite. I think we're still too close to it to think what the standout scene is going to be in that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it needs time.
Yeah.
For us to go back and then do a retrospective.
You got really quiet at the end there.
That's true. I didn't want to mispronounce another word. So, yeah.
And the sun is setting. It's very kind of quaint in here. We're getting kind of quiet, getting ready for night.
Getting ready. This is NPR.
Getting ready. This is NPR. I don't listen to a lot of NPR. I don't know what it sounds like. Lane, do you have an NPR impersonation?
We're talking about business in community development. We're here with Kevin Pabst, local game developer.
Oh my God! You should be on the radio.
Can you elucidate us on game development topics?
You know, it's a really complicated issue. When I think about... Okay, enough of that.
That is spot on. No. Anyone who listens to NPR, you know what we're talking about.
NPR. Is NPR national?
Yes.
National Public Radio.
I get confused with
NPR. There is NPR, Minnesota Public Radio.
I thought they were the same thing.
No.
Anyways, that's been our topic of the week, where we talked all about community things and all the sprawling, splayed difference coming off of that. I mean, you know... We're a podcast. It takes us where we go. We don't have a hard and fast rubric.
So take what you get. What are we closing out with?
We're not closing out yet. It's going to be our last segment. We're going to do plugs and stuff.
Yeah, but don't we like close out with some music, then
bring
it back
yeah.
in,
The segment closes out.
Yeah, so what are we closing out within the segment?
We did Bohemian Rhapsody earlier. Ernest, what do you got?
Let's do Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer.
Whew. Wow, pulling from the rock band set list.
I mean,
you
if
can
we...
feel it. It's already playing under us right now.
We're going to go with classic karaoke drunk bar songs. We got to have Living on a Prayer.
This is our third segment. Catch us on the other side of Bon Jovi's classic rock band, really hard to 5-star song. We'll be back with plugs. Thomas got a 6-string in high. Okay, for people joining us, this is Plugs and also My Dream.
The Dreamcast.
Me and a bunch of people, we went to sushi today, and I made a reservation for 14 people. And I had a dream that we went there, and they made the reservation for 5 people. And so we had to sit all over the restaurant and yell at each other.
Oh no, he didn't!
And then I woke up, went back to sleep, and had a dream that we went to the restaurant, and they were like out of sushi or something.
That's funny.
And then I had another dream that we went there 2 hours late, and they had given away her reservation. I was really nervous about this.
Wow,
your
dreams
are assholes.
Yeah.
Wow, you were really anxious about this.
Yeah.
Did you have a dream last night?
Oh, no, I did not have a dream.
Lane, how often do you dream?
I dream every 3 days.
Prozac is pretty cool. Ernest, you should get on Prozac.
I dream enough. Like, it's too much. I kind of wish I dreamed less.
For new listeners, that was pretty close. For new listeners, I started getting on the Prozac train because I was feeling sad all the time.
By the way, Prozac, pretty good musical group, but that aside. It's a real musical group.
Prozac is pretty great, and it makes it so I have dreams now when I haven't had dreams in like 10 years.
Can I say my dream?
Yes.
That's what started this whole thing. Okay, please don't judge me.
I will.
Everyone. But the dream I had last night is I raped one of my Japanese class TAs.
Terui sensei?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I had a huge crush on her. I still do. I hope she doesn't listen to this. I'm Facebook friends with her, so hopefully.
You saw her walking with some Baka Gaijin.
But, man, that just goes to show you how much sexual tension there was. At least for me.
So, Ernest, besides...
I'm sure she's had dreams about raping you.
Besides dreaming about raping...
It was intense.
Besides dreams about Let raping just, cute Japanese women.
Japanese.
I didn't know what she was. Besides dreams about raping Asian women, what have you been working on recently? You have an article coming up we can look forward to?
I don't know. I just post new stuff. Right now on PSU.com, you can read about Miku Miku Haki, a game prototype that was a collaboration between Krypton Future Media, which is the creators of Hatsune Miku, and Sony, actually. And they created this augmented reality game where you can play air hockey with Miku using the PlayStation Vita. Using Sony's patent smart AR technology. Can you believe that's a patent?
Lane, what have you been working on? Please don't tell me Haku Miku Miku Hara.
No, I can tell you that because it has been a void. I've not been working on anything new this week.
Really?
Oh, no.
It sounds like you were working on the Table Gaming Fall Preview coming up.
Oh, indeed, indeed. If you're in the Minneapolis area, you can stop right on by the Table Gaming Club.
We, Layton and I, as officers of TableGamingClub.com, are privy to all of the upcoming secrets, and Layton wrote all of the super cool copy for the reveals over the course of... It starts on Monday, right?
Yes.
It does.
It does. Yeah.
It does.
Yep. So look forward to reading that on TableGaming.com.
If you're a fan of... slow rolling reveals from corporate entities, if you will, enjoy this.
If you're excited for announcements get excited for the announcement for announcements.
If you just need something to have a countdown clock ticking down to, this is one more thing to add to your list.
Yeah. Set up your G calendar for TableGaming.com's reveal of Our Name Is Gonna Be Glitch.
Kevin, for God's sake, save us.
Whoa! You're not supposed to say that!
Oh.
Hope by the time this posts on Monday, that will be public
Yep,
knowledge.
That is the first reveal.
We'll be safe.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
We are not wizards, we are also not live.
Yep, we are not live. This won't go up until Monday at the earliest.
Oh, okay. I feel better now.
Yeah, you should.
Alright. Glitch it is.
I sure hope the world doesn't end on Sunday. I've been working on not a whole lot, editing through through a couple of things. Lane's thing needed almost no editing. I just added a comma, which he removed a modifier. He removed very. I don't know the names of words, even though I'm an editor.
Very is a terrible word. No one should use very ever in their English language. If you're writing something right now, take the verys out.
Yep, unless you're going for word count and it's a high school paper, then fuck it.
I
just realized I don't use very.
No, nobody should. Nobody should.
They should.
Ernest says, I just realized I'm pretty great. You didn't see his touch, his chest touch.
Stop.
Stop.
Stop. STAHP.
Thank you. I've been working on a whole lot. Yeah, editing stuff, my paper. You know, maybe when I submit my paper, I might put it online. I might put it on WeirdNotWizards.com, that cool website where all of our stuff goes up. It's right. I'm not going to say it because Ernest purposefully misinterprets its title every time. Minstrelsy.
He's obviously talking about menstrual cycles. Like, it's just like a pretentious way to say menstrual.
This is what I put up with every day.
It's like when you have finance professors who pronounce it finance. I'm just like, we're not going there.
We are not wizards.
Yeah, I go up to the prof and I'm like, we are not wizards.
That is
pronounced finance.
That is a great segue into plugs because I've been working on a whole lot this week. Ernest, where can we find your stuff?
Twitter and Tumblr, Ernst D. Lin, at Ernst D. Lin.
Cool.
ERNSTYLIN.
And PlayStationUniverse.com.
Yep, PSU.com, and movie review here and there on 401 Mania.
You got a trip recently. Can you talk about that? Or is that under NDA?
No, I can't.
Okay.
Because it is under NDA.
In the vague future, look forward to something from Ernest about something somewhere.
Woo, it's a teaser.
Oh, did you hear that? He said either the DuckTales. Woo! It's going to be DuckTales.
Speculate away.
Lane, where can we see your stuff?
You can find wacky social experiments at coffeeandpillows.com. You can see game-related works either at Not Wizards or at tapeowngaming.com. And you can hear all of our beautiful past content at notwizards.com.
That's where I was going. Jesus. Talk about a cock tease. You can find me on Twitter at T-A-L-L-E-H, Tella. I don't know why I still make it that, because I keep getting tweeted at people who are clearly speaking Arabic. Because I think my name is something in Arabic. You can find me on Facebook, Kevin Pabst, Pabst Like the Beer, exactly. I'm not the trumpeter, so if you look for that. And
don't look for trumpet music.
Yeah, don't look for trumpet music. This has been the fifth episode of the We Are Not Wizards podcast. You should like us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on iTunes, just for search for We Are Not Wizards. Find us at notwizards.com. We're hopefully going to retroactively put up pages for the past few episodes. Yeah, taking us out is going to be... what should it be this week?
There should be one more classic drinking song. And I think that should be Journeys.
Journeys.
He's broken.
Don't stop believing.
Don't stop believing.
Okay.
Oh my god, I just broke there.
Okay. Like us on Facebook. Hopefully by the time this publishes, Ernest will be managing our Facebook page and also Twitter. Maybe he'll have something cool to tweet about. Everyone should go home and watch Muppet Treasure Island. Like us on subscribe to us on iTunes. We Are Not Wizards. Give us a 5-star rating if you can. Leave a comment about how much you hate Hatsune Miku. Or what have you. Yeah, notwizards.com, that's the domain we registered. There's not much there yet, but we'll add stuff, like I already said. We're not wizards, I can assure you. Tell your friends to stay a spell and listen.
Hey everybody, Lane here, cutting into the podcast because we couldn't do our normal outro this week. We got hit with something so much better. About 2 minutes after we stopped the show, Ernest launches into this impassioned rant that we had to share with you. If you've never read one of his reviews over at 411mania.com, you are about to understand why he is a phenomenal, phenomenal reviewer. He loves movies, and we got the chance to listen to him talk about a movie that all but destroyed his enjoyment for the medium. Take care.
And then
we can have everyone on.
I watched Jack and Jill. It was just awful.
It was debilitating.
And I didn't want to see Adam Sandler's face for days. I didn't want to see it. I didn't even want to watch a movie days.
This sounds serious.
Yeah. When I don't want to watch a movie for days, that's awful. Because I love movies. I just didn't want to see it because the fact that I was going to be watching a movie was just even the little bit similar to watching Jack and Jill because that was a movie. I don't want to ever see that movie again. I don't want people to... It was to the point where I just wanted to kill Adam Sandler.
Wow.
I hate you. You're just an asshole. You're an asshole.
You told us like a couple weeks ago you'd seen bad Adam Sandler movies.
Grown-ups. That's my boy, Zohan.
But that was funny.
Yeah, it was funny. It was just bad funny. And this is just straight out bad. Wow. And it was... You have good mindfuck movies.
Yeah.
You know, stuff, I don't know, like Inception.
Wait, this is a mindfuck movie? Are they secretly the same prison?
There's not...
Adam Sandler movie?
You can spoil this. Feel free.
Okay, there's not a twist. It's just it fucks with your mind.
Wait, this is Jack and Jill, right?
It just takes it, it keeps taking it. Like, you think that's the worst, and it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and the bar just keeps getting lower and lower, and you are scared. I was physically scared on what was going to happen next. And the thing is, while we're watching on the Xfinity app on 360, and it froze. And we felt like we had to finish it. Because if we didn't finish it, it would never be over.
Wow.
Like, it was like a Jumanji effect. I don't know. But just like, there was no chance of us letting go of this until we had just finished. Even though it's just awful. There was Jared from Subway. Yeah, you had Al Pacino. You had all these people. I'm like, I hate all of you. Did you guys just all lose bets? Like, you are all assholes. Let me spoil the end of the movie. And the end of the movie there's a subplot where, okay, Adam Sandler's character...
He's still on this.
Yes, I am. I'm still talking. Okay, Adam Sandler, he is a commercial director, marketing guy. And so he's trying to do a commercial with Al Pacino for Dunkin' Donuts. And at the very end of the movie, they have a commercial. Al Pacino turns to Adam Sandler. And he's not talking... Like, it's my belief that he's not talking about the commercial. He's talking about the movie as well. He turns to Adam Sandler and he says, this is terrible. And Adam Sandler's like, really? Like, I showed it to my wife and she said it was okay. It's like, no, this is terrible. Find every copy. Burn every copy. This is the worst thing ever created. No one must ever see this. And I think he's talking about the movie. Wow. I like to think he is talking about the movie as a whole because it should never be seen by someone. What I was really glad after I saw this, after I saw this movie, what I was really happy is that Roger Ebert, bless his soul, never had to review this movie, which means he probably never saw it. If it affected me this much, he probably would have given up the fight against cancer after seeing it would have died soon. That's how bad this movie is to cinema as a whole.
Wow.
Rotten Tomatoes.
I've seen bad movies. I've seen Ginger Dead Man. I've seen god-awful movies, but nothing as... It broke my heart. Jeez. That's what it did for all of cinema. Where almost the whole week I couldn't watch a movie. I couldn't watch anything funny. I was watching. You know what I was watching on YouTube following this movie? I was watching tutorial videos because I wanted to learn. I was watching how to like do stuff. Because anything funny, I just associated with just this with Jack and Jill because it's supposed to be a comedy.
Oh my god!
I've never had an experience like that.